This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's been just over 10 years since Kannapolis was hit with a bombshell on July 30th, 2003. Pilotex shut its doors, throwing nearly 5,000 people out of work. It was a devastating blow, but in the 10 years since, steady progress has been made toward reviving that region, and much of the responsibility for that progress goes to the North Carolina Research Campus. The facility grew out of the ground that used to support those iconic Pilotex smokestacks, changing the town of Kannapolis and its culture, with its impact now being felt well beyond the city limits. We're going to talk about this renaissance for Kannapolis and about the work being done at the North Carolina Research Campus this hour. Mike Todd is executive director of the campus. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And while he runs the campus at large, we also wanted to hear from some of the people involved in the cutting-edge research being conducted there. And Dr. Mary Ann Lila is one of those people. She is director of the North Carolina State University Plants for Human Health Institute. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Dr. Corey Brower is director of the UNC Charlotte Bioinformatics Services Division.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. And Dr. Nicholas Gillett is director of the Dole Nutrition Research Laboratory. He didn't even bring a pineapple this morning. Thank you for joining us as well.
Good morning, everyone.
When Pilotex shut its doors, I don't believe that the North Carolina Research Campus was on anybody's radar, including Mr. Murdoch's. How long after 2003 did the idea surface, and then how long after that did it take to actually break ground? Mike, do you know?
Yes, I do know a bit of the history there. The idea was formulated not too long after the closing, and then I believe by 2006, some of the partners were moving down into the Main Street area into the Cannon Village. The main buildings that you now see on campus, those came online 2007, 2008. So it took some time for those plans and constructions to come along and to recruit the partners.
And I was right. The campus sits where the Pilotex factory used to be.
It's the 350-acre research park, of course, in Kannapolis, on the former site of the Pilotex mill.
And how much of the campus has been completed to this point? All of it?
No. We still have our eye on more growth, more partners, but I think it's fair to say at this point we've made significant progress, and there have been steady signs of growth throughout.
How much progress has been made? How much of the campus is complete? A third of it? Half of it? Two-thirds of it?
Well, I think the sky's the limit. I don't know that our end goal, our future vision, is capped or set. Certainly, the game has changed. The picture has changed since 2008 and the economic climate that we face now. But we have, again, seen continuous growth throughout. So we're looking at more buildings, more partners. And we can talk about specific plans and ongoing construction a little later.
And we will. Kannapolis was a mill town until the mill disappeared, and thousands of people, as I said, were thrown out of work from jobs that are never coming back, we are told. Has the research campus and the businesses that have grown up to support it around the research campus helped replace any of those jobs, many of those jobs? How many of those jobs would you say?
Right now, the campus has about 650 jobs associated with the various partners on campus. And since there are 18 partners, 9 universities, 5 corporate partners, 2 healthcare organizations, and a few others, that spread throughout them. So, yes, it's replaced some of the jobs, but we have our eye on more growth and more jobs, certainly.
Actually, this is going to be a show mostly, an hour mostly about the research campus, but the research campus is it's key to helping Kannapolis recover. And Mark in Charlotte has already called this morning and couldn't hold, but he wants to know that since Pilotex closed down, how are the finances in Kannapolis? Is the town at risk of becoming the next Detroit? Or are they on a more solid financial footing? Or do you know? Because you may not know.
I couldn't speak authoritatively to that. I know the Kannapolis mayor, city manager, there is an ongoing economic development process that they're involved in and are involving various municipal stakeholders, of which the campus is one. No, I don't think they're on a trajectory to be the next Detroit, but I couldn't really say too much about their plans at this point, other than we want to be part of that vision.
The other thing about Kannapolis prior to 2003 was that it was a mill town, a traditional mill town. It was the culture of the town was a mill town culture, and now you're bringing in high tech and science and academics and research. Will that change the culture of the town and the surrounding area?
I think it will have to if we're going to be integrated into the city's vision. I think that we're going to have to leave our stamp on the city.
How many people work there right now?
on the campus. Mm-hmm. There are about 650 jobs associated with the various organizations
and
on campus.
Are most of them research positions, academic positions, scientific positions?
It runs the gamut from researchers, lab techs, research research-related personnel, you name it.
And do most of them live and work? I mean, they work there, but do most of the people live in that area now?
In the surrounding towns, all the way to Charlotte, some, but mm-hmm. many just right around Concord and Kannapolis. And I will say that I am amazed at how receptive Kannapolis has been to the research campus. Before I came, I was actually a little worried. You know, how would the former mill workers receive this research campus, you know, and these PhDs moving into their community? I've never met people that are more receptive to the new developments and more interested in what's happening on the campus. We used to have community talks, community presentations on Tuesday nights, and 300 people from the town would come and spend two and a half hours just to find out what was going on the campus, because there was this intense interest in just finding out what science could do for them.
Well, let's talk about that, because you're all the way up there, wherever that is. Can you get there from here? I'm not sure.
Not easily.
But what exactly is the North Carolina Research Campus, and what exactly are you looking into, you evil scientists?
You can't see us, so we're twiddling our mustaches right now.
What plans are you hatching up there? What's going on?
Well, that's the question that everybody usually asks when you say that you work up at the research campus. And really, it's studying human health and nutrition. And people are very interested in that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and looking at ways that we can prevent disease through better nutrition mm-hmm. and healthier eating.
Is this unique in terms of its...
I think it is what I know of the industry. You have groups like this that look into pharmaceuticals and things like that, RTP, you know, is an example of mm-hmm. North Raleigh. I think this is the first kind of place where it's all based around this intersection of human health, agriculture, and nutrition.
How did it come to be? I know that David Murdoch, this is his brainchild. But mm-hmm. why was he? You're the guy from Dole.
I am.
So tell me, Dr. Gillett, why was he so interested in doing this?
Well, Mr. Murdoch has led a very, very interesting life, and he himself will admit that he used to not be as healthy as he is now. He had some terrible things happen in his life. His wife died of cancer, and he became aware that their diet and lifestyle wasn't very good. So after that happened, he was a billionaire, so he tried to spend a lot of money trying to find a cure and make her better, but to no avail. So after that sort of dark period of his life, he decided that health and nutrition was really, really important. Mm-hmm. And he happened to own Dole Food Company, the fruits and vegetables, the healthiest products in the world. So he thought he had a great vehicle to start getting that knowledge out to the consumer and make people live longer and healthier lives. Well, it just so happens that he, was involved with these other business dealings that he had the campus, or the Pilatex mill, the campus. So he decided what better legacy to leave than bring together world-class scientists and get them to look at health and nutrition and try and find out things that are going to help the consumer live a longer and healthier life. And so he put his personal money into trying to create the campus, bring together the right partners so that he could get things from scientist thoughts onto products on shelves as quick as he possibly could by sort of forcing people to work together. Mm. You know, universities don't often work together like they do at the campus. You know,
They're in silos.
Right.
You may be at one university working on one part of the same problem that somebody else somewhere else is working on, and you really don't get a chance to share that information. And as I understand it, the idea behind this campus is that you can literally walk across the street.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Campuses even a half hour apart from each other, mm-hmm. like in the Research Triangle at RTP, won't work together. Like we
won't
can.
Or just
don't. Just don't. It's not in the culture to do so.
Well, I think universities are usually in competition with each other.
Yes.
I mean, their two main products are research and students, mm-hmm. and they're in competition with each other to produce both. So having NC State and UNC systems together, all working towards the same goal of research associated with human health, it kind of gets the ball rolling quicker.
Well, given the culture that we're talking about, where they don't work together, why were they willing to take a stab at this on the same campus in Kannapolis when they didn't do it on their campuses separated by 30 minutes up in Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill? Why not?
There are incentives for us to play well together on campus.
Yes.
What are they?
Well, financial at first, pots of money at first that allowed collaborative projects. But now I think just the opportunity to have such stellar partners with expertise that's different than your own, we're seeing the opportunity to compete for federal grants that demand interdisciplinary or transdisciplinary research. We couldn't have that in our own little silos, as you say.
Are you the fulcrum of all this, Dr. Brower? Because you're the bioinformatics person. You're the guy that keeps track of all the data.
That's right.
Are you the fulcrum?
Well, we're in a unique position, and we get an opportunity to collaborate with everyone on campus, which is quite an exciting area because we'll be working. We do a lot of work with NC State and a lot of agricultural-type work, all the way through to working with the different universities, working with Appalachian State and their exercise science, working with Chapel Hill on clinical studies. It's an exciting position to be in because we literally do. We work with the data, and we help people with their data analysis. And so that's one of the things that attracted me to this position.
Dr. Lila, you're with NC State. So given the fact that universities don't necessarily collaborate, and now there's an incentive to do so, and you're in this position where you are, what was it like to be able to do that? And when you go out and talk to colleagues who are not at a facility like that, what do you now tell them about doing so, about collaboration?
It's like being a kid in a candy store, the campus. We have the collaboration of minds. We have the instrumentation that generates such unbelievable amounts of data, gives Corey Brower a job, gives him job security, because now scientists, with the kind of state-of-the-art instrumentation that we have for metabolomics and genomics and proteomics, it generates so much information that scientists never were able to put their fingers on before, and it boggles the mind, which is why we need the bioinformatics component.
You know, today it's quite amazing. The experiments that are done routinely today produce terabytes of data per experiment. And so it's not even something that a scientist can work on their desktop anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we've got high-performance computers that are able to process this type of information where we measure the RAM on these computers in terabytes, not the disk space.
Oh, my God. So who funds all this? I know the buildings, the campus was put up by Mr. Murdoch, but does he fund the ongoing research as well, or is it funded by the individual institutions? Who funds it? Who pays the money?
For the most part, it's left up to the individual partners to identify their own funding streams.
Right. Yes. We're just like any other campus, where we are dependent on federal grants, industry partnerships to fund all of our research. Mr. Murdoch did build the buildings, and he bought some of the stellar toys that we have on campus. Yep. But we are responsible for funding our own research.
Hmm. You mentioned a bunch of things, metabolomics and
All the omics technologies.
All the omics. All those omics that we read so much about. what kinds of work are being done right now?
Well, for example, I'm at the Plants for Human Health Institute. I direct that institute. And we are all about bioactive compounds in plants that when you ingest, when you eat that plant or put it on your skin, those bioactive compounds interact with targets in the human body to help reduce chronic disease. That's what we're all about. Well, metabolomics allows us to look at a plant compound and see exactly where it goes in the body and how it has changed in the body.
We're going to talk more about that because that's really interesting, and it does bring about something. It gives truth to somebody. Somebody said food is medicine, and it gives truth to that. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Harris Holt Framing and Art Services on Kenilworth Avenue in Dilworth, serving Charlotte for more than 20 years with custom picture framing, art installation, prints, and now wide format printing services. Details at harrisholt.com. You know, lots of folks look forward to retirement, a time in which they can, you know, kick back, set their own schedule, do what they want to do when they want to do it. But studies show now that delaying retirement may reduce your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease or other kinds of dementia by as much as 3% for every additional year that you work. We'll talk about that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm show, tensions between the U.S. and Russia mount over NSA leaker Edward Snowden, the Kremlin's new anti-gay laws, and Syria. A chilly turn in U.S.-Russia relations.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the research campus up in Kannapolis and the revival of Kannapolis thanks to this coming together of mad scientists working on nutrition and health. Mike Todd is the executive director of the campus. Dr. Marianne Lila is director of the North Carolina State University Plants for Human Health Institute. Dr. Corey Brower, director of the UNC Charlotte Bioinformatics Services Division, who has a computer that's the envy of every gamer in the world. And Dr. Nicholas Gillett is director of the Dole Nutrition Research Lab. How many different projects are – we're going to get into this P2 or P squared EP thing in a second, but how many different projects are underway by the various entities that are housed at the campus?
It's an immense number. I mean, just from Dole's perspective, we've probably got four or five main research projects that we're collaborating on with different university partners. I'm sure other industrial partners at the campus have too, and I know that NC State is involved in a lot of different things. And there's quite a bit of overlap, but everybody has their own things to work on as well.
Is anybody working on the honeybee problem up there?
Not that I know of, no.
Because that seems to be, if there are no honeybees, you're all out of a job.
That's correct, yes.
I'm told that the research projects that are underway, many of them, and I quote here, will blow your mind and extend your life at the same time. Give me one or two examples of what would blow my mind and extend my life.
Well, let's start with the fruits and vegetables, right? It's no surprise when you talk to any person in the street, if you say, should I be eating more fruits and vegetables? Their answer is yes, they know they should. They just don't. Right? So the trick is, how do you get them to do it? And I think one of the cool ways of doing that is to do exciting scientific research that gets picked up by mainstream media and is talked about. And when consumers hear that kind of stuff on the news, programs like yours, you know, in the newspapers, on radio spots, then when they're in the supermarkets, they'll tend to be, you know, picking up more fruits and vegetables and putting them in their carts. That's the excitement we want to impart to people. So we think of research projects that are going to have that excitement. And one of the projects that Dole was involved in recently, we called it the banana exercise study. So we compared bananas to a sports drink as a source of energy and found that they were equally as good. So you can just eat a banana and drink a bottle of water and get as much from that as far as fuel is for energy in an exercise setting than you can buy all these expensive sports drinks that you see on the shelves these days.
So it's cheaper and better for you?
Exactly, exactly. And a natural alternative to what could be described as colored sugar water. So we want, you know, parents who are riding around the supermarket looking for what to buy their kids to take them to a sporting event on a weekend, we want them to put bananas in their cart.
Didn't we already know that? Didn't my mother tell me that?
You said it exactly there. It's completely anecdotal, and nobody had ever done a study on it before, right? So we're in the business of science. We need to prove things to people, and that's what we did with that particular study.
Why bananas? Aside from the fact that Dole sells them, why bananas?
Well, they are just one of the – guess what? They come in their own package, which is biodegradable. Mm-hmm. Right. The profile of sugars in them is exactly what people have worked on for years to find out are the most correct sugar profile to have for energy. It's the perfect food for energy. So
they have potassium and they're radioactive.
I wouldn't go far as saying they're radioactive, but they certainly do have potassium, and you need that too. They're full of vitamins and minerals. I mean, you know, we all knew that. You're right. You see athletes eating them all the time, but has anybody actually proven that?
Okay.
And that's what we were able to do, and we got a lot of attention for that.
Give me another example of something that would blow our minds and extend our lives.
Well, if people know that they can eat berries. Mm-hmm. And it'll actually reduce blood glucose levels if they have symptoms of diabetes or a loved one that suffers from diabetes. And they can do this without drugs. That's a huge drawing card. And you're right. People knew fruits and vegetables were good for them. Their grandmothers always told them. It's part of traditional ecological knowledge with Native Americans. But the doctors in America tend to be very focused on the pharmaculture. Go get a drug. Don't worry about nutrition. They may not even have taken a class in nutrition.
Right.
Once they can see scientific evidence to back up what we're saying about fruits and vegetables, then even the doctors turn their opinion and are able to give diagnosis and recommendations to patients that involve nutrition, not just having a drug.
Now, obviously, this is your jobs are to, particularly you, because you're a plant scientist, mm-hmm. plant for human health, and the Dole Company mm-hmm. is involved, obviously, in plants and foods. There's something in it for Dole to be involved in this kind of scientific research, because if you can prove that bananas are better than, or as good as, or better than, and certainly cheaper than sports drinks right. to achieve the same end, you're going to sell bananas.
Which there is no downside to.
But why aren't other food companies involved in this kind of research to this scale, given the stakes?
Well, I think from Dole's perspective, it's Mr. Murdoch. This is his actual zealot-like will, if you like. He has made Dole into a company like that. And so it's his belief that we should be involved. That's why we're here. But other companies are too. General Mills is at the campus. They're involved to the same extent. But you're right. I think all food companies should have this in their arsenal, and they should be doing nutrition research. And we're seeing more food companies come to the campus wanting to find out what they can do to help promote their fruits and vegetables out there.
Is this research that they just conducted with the banana, and I assume it works with the Chiquita banana as well as the Dole
yes,
banana?
Yes, all bananas are the same, yes.
Just want to make sure.
We're increasing the tide all over, not just ourselves.
Is this the kind of thing that required terabytes of memory in a computer to analyze the data they got off a banana experiment?
Well, we were actually did some of the statistical work mm-hmm. collaborating with Dole and Appalachian State for that particular study. And so this one didn't require terabytes of data, but it required a lot of statistics and really making sure that we could say for certain that the results that we are seeing were conclusive. And we were able to demonstrate that working with them.
Okay. So one research university has the ability to talk to, and they're encouraged to talk to, walk across the street, down the hall, upstairs, to another building, to other people, and then go to you and Brower, Dr. Brower, and analyze the data that they're coming up with. And all of this involves students in the process.
Mm. Yes.
Is that unusual?
I think it's a wonderful addition to the campus that we can use student minds to bridge the gaps between universities. Students are the messengers. Students are the ones that bring people from main campus down to the research campus in a way that no one else can.
Some of the opportunities, too, that we can provide students up there are quite unique. So, you know, typically in a university setting, students will be exposed to the work that's done in academic labs, but here they get to work in both academic labs as well with industry partners, which provides an interesting and very unique mm-hmm. opportunity for the students.
Is there a difference in the way you conduct research or the way your lab is set up versus a university lab?
You might think so, but ultimately no. You know, you might think that a corporation would want to keep the information they find out secret, so they can gain some advantage from it. We're doing nutrition research, and it doesn't work unless the consumer finds out about the research. The only way to do that is to publish. So we publish all our results, and we write these studies, and we get them published in journals, and that way they can get picked up on. So in actuality, we work very similar to a university. We might have more directed projects. It's Dole. We work on pineapples and bananas, amongst other things. Mm-hmm. But the aim is to publish the information, just as it is in academia, get that information out there so the consumers can eventually be exposed to
what
it.
What if you discovered that there had been that there was no value to a banana and that the sports drinks were better? What if you had discovered that?
Right. Well, we would still publish.
You have to.
I mean, that's the point. You can't hide things like that. I mm-hmm. think it's really important that the consumers understand that. So we're all about full transparency. We want everybody to know what we're doing, and we want to publish. The thing about fruits and vegetables is, you know, it's kind of a loaded decan, isn't it? We already know they're healthy. So it's just a way of finding the experiments that show that. There's never going to be an experiment where you'll find out that a fruit or a vegetable is harmful to you. So we're not going to fall into that trap.
But people don't trust science today. maybe you've read about this in the paper, that they really don't trust science today. So why do you think that a scientist saying, hey, bananas are good for you, mm-hmm. and they do exactly what these sports drinks do at a more efficient level, a cheaper level, and all you need is a bottle of water to go along with it. Mm-hmm. Why do people believe that?
Well, I don't think you're right. I think people do trust science, especially when it's done properly, especially when it's published in high-quality peer-reviewed journals, which is what we go for, and especially when reputable media outlets report on it. I think that's
changing. You
don't trust
the media either.
Well, I mean, you know, that's not my fault, is it? but you have to, that's the outlet. You have to go for it. So I think it works.
There are 29 students, as I understand, 10 from North Carolina colleges, working with professionals on something called the Plant Pathways Elucidation Project. P squared EP is the shorthand for that. And they're looking into how plants benefit human health. We're talking about fruits and vegetables, right? Are we also talking about herbs and other things?
We can be in the future. It's fruits and vegetables now and oats.
Mm-hmm. And we don't understand that dynamic?
Oh, no. This is incredibly complicated. The whole pathway by which a plant will produce a product that when eaten by a human will impact on human health. Very, very complicated evolutionary pathways that the plant has engineered for itself. And we're only beginning to scratch the surface.
So let's break this down. Plant Pathways Elucidation mm-hmm. Project. That's a fancy name. What does it mean?
It's very exciting for us. We were looking for a way to bring together the partners on the campus, bring together our expertise in a project that could really make use of the different strengths that we had. And this is it. It is a way to look at what a plant makes, how does it make it, what is the pathway by which it makes it, and then what at the end does that product do to help human health in a scientific, to validate it scientifically.
So you're studying how plants manufacture compounds, and mm-hmm. they do this depending upon what they need for their own survival.
Exactly right.
And their own health, like facing drought or mm-hmm. facing too much water in the case of what's going on right now, or not enough sunlight. They're actually manufacturing, these plants are actually manufacturing new products, and you say that these products that they manufacture are beneficial or can be beneficial to human health. Give me some examples.
Oh, anthocyanin pigments. So those are the pigments that that a plant uses to protect itself against UV light, the red pigments in a berry, for example. Mm-hmm. Those are the same pigments that are anti-diabetic, that are actually anti-cancer as well.
Give me another one.
Oh, okay.
Give me a couple of examples. Don't
well,
leave
yeah.
me hanging here.
Dole is very interested in the phytochemical profiles of all fruits and vegetables. Mm. You know, look at all the go to the produce aisle and look at all the different colors of the fruits and vegetables that you see. They're all there due to different phytochemicals that are present in these fruits and vegetables. Mm. There are literally thousands and thousands of these compounds. And what we're looking into is, why do the plants make them and how do they make them? With the idea at the end that maybe we can improve the profile of these things by, you know, conventional breeding techniques.
And we're already being told that we should gravitate toward color.
Exactly.
Yes.
And we know that before we're being told that before you've conducted extensive research on all of this. Why are we being told to gravitate toward color if we don't even know why the plants are the way they are?
We do know a lot about okay. why the plants are how they are, but it makes it easy for people. It is, again, the plant pathways are extremely complicated. That's why this Plant Pathways Elucidation Project involves so many players at one time and really to get progress. But this is a way for us to, for people to understand it, is simply have colors on your plate. Don't eat all browns and whites on your plate. If you have colors on your plate, you have an edge on those health beneficial compounds that mm-hmm. plants produce.
How would Dole take what you find? How would a food company, any food company, mm-hmm. take what you discover in this project and bring it to the consumer or do something with the way you grow or harvest plants to improve human nutrition or take the compounds from plants sure. and improve human
well, the first thing to note about the P squared EP project is that, again, this is geared to full transparency. So any information that our students find out, we are going to publish in papers. So that information is going to be on general release to the public. Any scientist can read the paper and use the information they find. What's in it for Dole is that at some point we've got to learn how to make a better banana or improve the nutrition profile of an orange or something like that. So if we understand the pathways that these plants have to make these individual compounds, and we understand how they go about making these compounds, we can actually hopefully crossbreed different varieties of bananas or oranges and maybe create a profile of fiber or profile of phytochemicals that is more healthful than the one that exists.
You're tampering with the plants.
We're getting
or
the plants.
You want to.
We're getting the plants to breed together, which is what they do anyway.
Yeah, they do.
One of the things that we're doing with this project is we're providing tools that plant breeders will be able to use to help through traditional breeding processes bring in more of this nutrition. A lot of times what breeders have had to focus on is how do we make it more drought tolerant? How do we yield more of these various plants? What we're doing is we're providing these tools so that they can not only continue those breeding processes, but also breeding more nutrition while they're doing that.
I think a good example is a pineapple. Do you know it takes 18 months to grow a pineapple? If you're a farmer in a field and you have to wait 18 months to find out whether that pineapple's got the right amount of vitamin C in it or the right amount of a plant enzyme called bromelain, perhaps, that's a long time. We can develop with these pathways marker-assisted breeding, so we can find out before the pineapple is fully grown that it's going to taste right, that it's going to have the right amount of nutrients in it. So if we can do that, we can hurry up the process by which we get a more nutritious pineapple.
Pathways. What do you mean by pathways?
We start out with a single compound, and it changes through enzymatic reactions throughout the metabolism of the plant to become a final product. That's a pathway, and it can be very, very complicated, or it can be simple, couple of reactions.
And there are multiple things going on at the same time.
Multiple things. That's what makes it so exciting and so difficult.
And this is why you need the computing power, so you can figure out
exactly
how those pathways intersect, intertwine, follow them to the plant, the life of the plant?
That's exactly right. There used to be, probably about 15 years ago, a company used to publish, it's kind of a marketing thing, all the pathways that were known, I think theirs were in the human body. And it turned out to be several posters that were like 4 feet by 8 feet. And the type was like 9-point font. You could barely read it unless you're standing right up to it. Mm-hmm. Well, about 10 years ago, they quit publishing these because it would take, you know, an entire room full of these posters to publish what we know. And we're still just scratching the surface. Mm-hmm. The pathways are incredibly complex, and they're all interconnected. One of the things that was really interesting when we were first finding out all the genes in the human body and then also started sequencing some plants and stuff, everybody assumed that, you know, obviously humans would be, you know, have the most genes, you know, we're the most complex. But plants have more genes than most animals. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be surprising, and the reason why, plants can't move.
They can't move, yeah.
They have to be able to defend themselves, provide for all of their needs while they're stuck in one place. And that's one of the reasons why they're incredibly these chemical factories that produce all of these interesting compounds, which are essentially the nutrients and everything else that we're studying here.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to come back and talk more about how you take this information and improve a plant and what that really means. Because there are people out there who are uncomfortable with that idea that you're going to screw around with Mother Nature. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Hendrick Honda Hickory, offering new and certified pre-owned Hondas to the Charlotte Metro and Western North Carolina on Highway 70 in Hickory and at HendrickHondaHickory.com. Tensions between the U.S. and Russia mount over NSA leaker Edward Snowden, the Kremlin's new anti-gay laws, and Syria. A panel of experts joins Diane Rehn to talk about the chilly turn in U.S.-Russian relations coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehn Show. And we're going to continue our conversation about the rebirth of Kannapolis and the research facility there. And if you'd like to join us, you can do so at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Big day at the job. make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap Judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it. Saturdays at 8 p.m. or Fridays at 10 p.m. on WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about what's going on up at the research campus, the North Carolina Research Campus in Kannapolis, which opened several years ago on the site of the old Pilotex plant, and we'll talk more about this, which will be changing the nature of Kannapolis. Mike Todd is the executive director of the campus. Dr. Marianne Lilas, director of the North Carolina State University Plants for Human Health Institute. Dr. Corey Brower is the man who crunches the numbers. He's the director of the UNC Charlotte Bioinformatics Services Division, where they are dealing with more information than is humanly possible. That's why they have computers. And Dr. Nicholas Gillett is director of the Dole Nutrition Research Lab. Both you, Dr. Gillett, Dr. Lila, were talking a little bit about looking into plant pathways and seeing how these plants do what they do, and then finding a way to make them do it better or to help them do it better so that we can benefit as people who consume these plants. But people are suspicious and a little frightened sometimes of plants that have been altered in some way. Monsanto is the famous one that does the wheat, I think, that has changed the nature of wheat in this country. And some people suspect that that's why so many people are exhibiting gluten allergies now, because we've changed what wheat is. It's not the same product it was 50 years ago. If you start tampering with bananas and pineapples and apples and peaches and strawberries and blueberries because you want to enhance what we get out of them, is there not a danger to that?
Well, let's start by saying it's not tampering, right?
Oh, come on.
We are using conventional breeding techniques. These are techniques that the banana plants that we're talking about would use in the wild anyway. What we're trying to do is identify traits in individual species that maybe would go together. For example, the Cavendish banana that everybody sees in the supermarket. There's a disease that is you know, making sure that banana may not survive in the near future. Mm-hmm. Those are a wild banana species that doesn't respond to that disease. Now, if we put those two trees together, you would impart the resistance gene into the Cavendish banana. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about conventional breeding techniques. But what we need to do is understand the plant pathways that allow that species to be resistant to that Black Sigatoka virus. If we can do that, then we can find where that sort of location is in the banana's DNA, and then we can work out whether it successfully transferred when they were conventionally bred. And we'd rather do that at the very beginning than wait for it to grow and then find out it hasn't, right? So it's a shortening of the conventional techniques.
And given the problems facing the Cavendish, I didn't even know it was called a Cavendish, it's just a banana to me, but given the problems facing the Cavendish banana, which, as you said off the air a moment ago, tastes better mm-hmm. than the other banana varieties, it's that perfect yellow on the supermarket yeah. shelf that we like to see, that when we pick up a banana and put it in the cart. Are you working on that problem?
Yes.
Right now?
Yes. We are with the Plant Pathway Elucidation Project. Bananas are on the list. We're going to look at that kind of thing as soon as we get to them. We're doing strawberries, blueberries, broccoli, and oats right now, but you know we're going to finish those fairly soon, so we need to have others' crops of interest in waiting.
Jackie on the web, who is a little critical of this, says, shouldn't that be the Dole Genetic Engineering Laboratory as opposed to the Nutrition Research Lab? Because you want to genetically modify our foods without any respect, she says, to nutrition. It's all about the bottom line.
Well, you may think that, but we don't do any genetic engineering at all. All we do is put plants next to each other and let them breed completely on their own.
So when you say you want to take the wild variety of the Cavendish that mm-hmm. is not susceptible to this disease that the Cavendish banana is experiencing around the world and actually threatens the banana supply that we know and love.
Yeah.
They may disappear if we don't do something about
right.
this. You're not talking about genetically engineering the Cavendish. Oh. You're talking about putting a wild banana plant next to this domesticated banana plant and hoping that what happens?
They like each other? They
yes.
pollinate each other, yes. exactly.
Right.
That's what plants do. That's how plants reproduce.
Then wouldn't it be quicker to do it by modifying them genetically?
That would be quicker, yes. But guess what? That's genetic modification.
And you don't believe in that?
No.
Why not?
Well, it's a very sort of eloquent technique, I guess, in being able to manipulate genes in that way. But it's I don't think that there's enough safety data out there yet for us to believe in it. So we're
why does Monsanto believe in it then?
I have no idea. I don't work for Monsanto.
Okay. Doctor, you're a scientist who's not affiliated with a food company. So talk to me about genetic engineering at plants. Is that something that you are working on or any of your colleagues are working on?
Certainly my colleagues are. I look at it as simply another tool in the arsenal of a plant breeder. And man has been breeding since the beginning of history. And back before Mendel was simply putting pollen on different pea plants to make a better pea. The thing is, breeding has always been haphazard. Let's try mating these two plants and see what we get. Now we can be targeted about it. Mike said it earlier. It's like Match.com for fruits and vegetables. Put the right ones together and know what you're getting scientifically. That's really all it is.
Dr. Brower, you wanted to jump in a minute ago.
Yeah, so even if you were to use some of those techniques, you run into some of the same challenges because when other groups are doing that type of studies, they don't know where the gene's going to land within the genome. And so they still have to go through some of the same types of studies to see where that gene is in the genome when they've introduced it that way. Through traditional breeding techniques, we can cross these plants together, and we can look at what traits are there, and we have a better idea of where in the genome the trait that we're looking for is located anyway. And so in some ways, this can even be a better method.
Mm-hmm. And this is where computers help in all of this.
Exactly.
I'm told that you have put together one of the largest bioinformatics core groups in the state. Is it one of the largest in the country, it would seem to me, or not?
No, not one of the largest in the country, but it is probably one of the largest in the state. And one of the challenges with an area like bioinformatics is it really is a discipline comprised of a lot of different skill sets. Statistics are a big part of it, knowing how to program, knowing how to take different types of data and assemble it in databases, knowing how to develop algorithms. There's all these different types of skill sets that are required, as well as understanding different parts. Well, we talked a little bit about the different types of omics technologies in the past, metabolomics, genomics, proteomics, understanding all of these. Usually all of this isn't in one person. And so what we've done there is we've put together a group where we have individuals with each of these different skill sets where we can work together as a team and now have enough of these skill sets all together to really form a critical mass. And so when we look at a problem and we're collaborating with the various people on campus, it's not just one person on the team collaborating with them. It's several people all getting together, sitting down with the principal investigator that we're collaborating with and talking through the problem and understanding how each of these skill sets can come together to help solve these problems.
Is this the kind of thing that kind of metastasizes? I mean, it kind of grows on itself exponentially? And if so, what implications does that have for the future of the actual research facility? Mike?
I think this is a project that continued to grow based on its own success to involve more partners. But even beyond the success of this individual project, we're betting that it does induce spinoffs with other focuses. So other researchers on campus will form their other parallel groups to the Plant Pathways Elucidation Project. So that is our hope.
Okay.
And it's our hope, too, that other companies, food companies in particular, see how we're finding out this information and they want to be involved. And I think we're the only place in the world that's doing this right now, so they've got to come to us.
Are there ways to use this same kind of research to look at animal health and nutrition, because we eat a lot of meat, and the meat that we raise is terribly inefficient in terms of how much water it takes to produce protein versus a plant, and also how much methane is released into the atmosphere as a result of the animal doing what it has to do to continue living. Are people looking into the animal side of this?
Absolutely, and that was really the first focus for pathway elucidation was animals, humans, as well as cattle. But as was mentioned earlier, the plants are a lot more complicated. That's what makes our project really much more massive, mm-hmm. because we have a lot more to deal with in terms of the pathways.
Are there pharmaceutical implications to this? I mean, if food is medicine, mm-hmm. and it kind of is, as you look into things, can you find better drugs as well as better foods?
Better phytopharmaceuticals. 25% of all pharmaceuticals now are actually either from a plant or based on a template of a molecule from a plant. So this is simply a way to get more targeted, to look at what a plant can deliver and find out the modus operandi. How does it actually work?
I was going to ask about post-harvest. We have a question about mm-hmm. that from a listener who says, what about the post-harvest handling of foods, helping to maximize retention of the bioactive? Somebody knows mm-hmm. something about the vocabulary here. Well, what kind of handling and why is it different from doing it before harvesting?
Yes, at the Plants for Human Health Institute, we have Dr. Penny Perkins-Veazey, all about the post-harvest handling of fruits and vegetables, specifically so that you maintain and preserve the bioactive compounds. Because it is true that if a fruit or vegetable is not properly stored or is left too long before consumption, you can lose a lot of those bioactive compounds. Or if you process a fruit or a vegetable into some product, you may lose all the bioactivity unless you know what you're doing.
Well, we know about tomatoes. You can't buy a good tomato anymore in the grocery store because they pick them when they're green, and they on the way in the truck, they gas them to make them turn red, but they're not really naturally developing. Are there nutritional implications to that aside from flavor implications?
It's absolutely the case, yes. So that is exactly what we're all about, is trying to find ways that we can deal with shipping issues and processing issues, but still maintain those bioactive compounds. And we're making great strides.
What about bananas? Because they're certainly not native to northern North America. I'm not sure.
No, they're not. Yes.
and I know that you pick them when they're green. And when I go to the grocery store to buy bananas, I buy the green ones because I know that they will last longer on the countertop. Am I cheating myself? Have we lost any nutritional value?
No, we haven't. Bananas' nutritional profile changes a little bit as they ripen from green to yellow. Mm-hmm. So you're getting different aspects of nutrition. When they're green, they have a lot more fiber in them. And then those fibers break down and turn into sugar. So as they get ripe towards the yellow and the little spots that you get on there at the end, then they have a lot of sugar in them and the fiber's gone down. So you get more carbohydrates. The phytochemical profiles differ as well as ripening stage. So they're just as nutritious, green or yellow. It depends what you're after. If you're after lots of fiber, eat them when they're green. If you're after lots of carbohydrates and phytochemicals, eat them when they're yellow.
And if you want to use them as a hammer,
yes.
Do so while it's green.
Yes.
When Pilatex was there, obviously, there were a lot of businesses that had grown up around Pilatex to service the people who worked there and the needs of the Pilatex company. What kinds of businesses are growing up around the research campus to service both the people who work there and the needs of the research campus?
We're starting to see the exact kinds of support services and stores and retail services you'd expect to see. I do need to take a moment and recognize our campus developer, mm-hmm. Castle & Cook, a key campus partner, for their leadership in prompting campus growth. Certainly their president, Lynn Seyfried, vice president for business development, Clyde Higgs, have done a great job, and I think it's a testament to their leadership that we've continued to see growth over the last 5 years. I don't know many organizations that can say that. Over the times we've seen. So I just need to throw that out there and know that the future is looking good. We are starting to see all kinds of additional growth. There was a press release about data chambers coming to campus. They're going to be starting on a 50,000-square-foot data center soon. In addition to that plan construction, the NCRC Medical Plaza opened recently. That'll house the Carolinas healthcare system. That'll open in fall 2013, so coming right up. Mm-hmm. Certainly we've got the new City Hall on the boards. So that's going to begin in, I believe, February are the dates I'm hearing.
So in 5 years, 10 years, because it's only been 10 years since Pilatex went under, in 10 years from now, what do you think Kannapolis will be like as a result of what you are doing at the research campus?
I think it will be a burgeoning village full of life because – I don't know because I didn't see the rise of RTP, but I believe what we're doing here is going faster than RTP did at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So if you see where that place is now and you add on a few years, I think we're going to be there.
Isn't there an algorithm that you can apply to this? And
that would be nice, right?
And extrapolate it out. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you're on schedule, and it sounds to me like you're ahead of schedule.
Well, there was a dip with the economy. Right. You know, Mr. Murdoch built the buildings that he's built, and then it kind of had to relax a little bit. But things are changing now. The economy is turning around. More buildings are going up. And I think food companies are beginning to realize that nutrition research is a lot more important than they used to think it was. So we're getting a lot more people coming through the campus that are very interested in either being here or looking at what we're doing.
So what's on the horizon? What's on the drawing boards that you're about to embark on or you'll embark on in a couple of years but hasn't started yet? What's in
the
pipeline?
We are less than 5 years old. Our campus is less than 5 years old. So, and we did begin right at the beginning of the economic crisis. So many of the companies that had looked at the campus and were intending to come to the campus, it didn't happen right away because in 2008, 2009, it couldn't. But now we're at a point where, because of the Plant Pathways Elucidation Project in particular and some of the press that has come out of that and the discoveries that are coming out of that, when I went to the Institute for Food Technology meetings in Chicago a few weeks ago, all kinds of companies coming up to our booth for the campus saying, how can I plug in? Companies that had visited us previously in years previous, but now they wanted back in because they knew what we were doing was nowhere else in the world.
Dr. Marianne Lila is director of the North Carolina State Plants for Human Health Institute, located at the North Carolina Research Campus. Dr. Corey Brower is director of UNC Charlotte's Bioinformatics Services Division, also there. And Dr. Nicholas Gillett is director of the Dole Nutrition Research Lab. Mike Todd, executive director of the whole shebang of the North Carolina Research Campus. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike.